Hello, everyone. I'd like to welcome all of you to Ohio Exopolitics. I'm your host, Mark Snyder. It is January 4th, 2020 at 4 p.m. Eastern. I've got Rem and Steven on the line, and we're going to have an interesting discussion. It's only going to be an hour today. I have to run down, and I'm playing tonight a place called Urban Comforts in Zanesville, if you happen to be around. Just Google it and drop by if you like. But let me bring Steven and Rem in. Now you guys can unmute yourselves unless you just want to be muted. You don't have to unmute yourself. You can just...
I'm here. Hey.
How's it going?
Pretty good. Got back to Colorado after being in Ohio and being in Montreal over the past 2 weeks. And
where were you in Ohio?
I'm from Northeast Ohio. It's a small town called Chagrin Falls.
Oh, I know where that's at. It's near Cleveland, yeah. Isn't it?
Yeah, about 30 minutes east of Cleveland.
I've been there before, actually.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I was just there yesterday morning.
Wow. And where else were you?
Up in Montreal, Canada.
Were you painting something up there?
I was just up there for the so-called holidays, right?
Oh.
Was up there for just with my girlfriend and her daughter, and we went to visit her father and some of her friends. So, yeah.
Is your girlfriend into physics? Do I remember that correctly?
Yeah, she's a physicist.
Yeah. That's awesome. That would be interesting to have a wife or a girlfriend that was real technical like that.
Yeah, so
I bet it has its challenges too sometimes.
it does, but I mean we have a very nice relationship. It's pretty harmonious, and we get along. And we have enough space, and even though we live in a small house, there's a lot of freedom in our relationship. Like we can kind of be together, but do our own thing.
Hmm.
It's nice. Yeah.
That's good. I remember some of the girlfriends I had growing up with, one, she was wonderful. I mean, she was really an awesome chick, but I mean, if I would go work out, she would cry sometimes just because I'd be gone for an hour. I mean, it's like, it's not going to work. It's just not going to work. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
So you know how life is. Steven, how have you been?
Fine, yeah. How about you?
Oh, pretty good. Like, we haven't talked. Like, last show, you weren't here. You took off, didn't you?
Yeah. Maybe the week before, I can't remember. You know, they all blur.
They do. They blur a lot, definitely. And you were bringing up the fact that general was killed, their Iranian general. What's his name? Soleimani or Qasem Soleimani? Am I pronouncing that correct?
Your guess is as good as mine, but yeah, I think it's like Soleimani, maybe.
Soleimani, yeah. I heard Dr. Steve Pachinik talking about that on the Alex Jones show. I don't know if you've ever heard of Steve Pachinik or not.
Yeah, I have, yeah. What do you have to say?
Well, he thought it was good. And I'm like, oh. My first impression on the whole thing was that, you know, the deep state, let's call it the deep state for lack of a better term, has been wanting to take over Iran for quite some time. And I think either Trump just doesn't understand, or he has to play ball with these guys so they don't kill him. Like, he has to do things sometimes to, you know, keep the powers that be at a distance. And I'm just wondering, who knows? I mean, it's pure speculation, but I don't like the feel of this myself. What do you think?
Well, yeah, I got to try to keep an open mind on everything. But,
yeah.
I mean, I'm looking at the attack on the embassy, right?
Mm-hmm.
Just a few days ago. And I'm sure that that gentleman played a significant factor in it, you know. So, yeah, it's interesting to know. Like, I'm just wondering about the response here. So, for what they have on the table, you know, not just militarily, but.
Well, didn't we send 4,000 troops or something like that?
Mm-hmm.
Why did we do that? I don't get that.
Well, you got to send a statement, I think, from the military perspective that we have resources in the area that if you decide to do something that we'll be able to respond, I think would be proper. But
Rem, what do you think? Rem?
Oh, yeah. I actually, it cut out for a moment because I got away from my house, away from the Wi-Fi. So it, I'm not sure. I kind of missed a lot of what you said.
Oh, so, we were talking about that Iranian general that was killed by, I guess, our special forces. Did you hear about that?
I had never heard about that until now.
Oh, wow. Yeah, it's one of the big things on the news right now. You know, the bigger thing, I think, I mean, we could circle back to this assassination, which is what we did. We assassinated this guy. Is the fire in Australia. That's what's killed like 500,000 animals. Have you heard about that?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, this is like crazy, you know? I mean, that is as bad as our stuff on the West Coast.
Exactly.
And that fits right in with all the prophetic stuff. Have you heard about that, Rem? I don't want to put you on the spot here.
No, because I haven't been listening to any news whatsoever in the last few months.
Oh my
actually.
Goodness. You know, I get that way too. I'm not trying to make you look bad or feel bad because especially like when I'm studying the Meyer material real hard, like I just block everything out and I get real busy. And a lot of this stuff, you know, when you talk about the whole big picture, I have to go back to that movie Zeitgeist, and if you haven't seen that yet, you got to see this movie. I have to go back to fractional reserve banking, and let me just bear with me for a little bit. I know that sounds dull, but it really isn't. This is what's going on in the world. It's total insanity. Let's say I want to start my own bank, and at one time I think you only had to have like $10,000. If I wanted to, you know, and then I get registered as a bank at the Bank of Mark. $10,000 is, you know, the government says, fine, you're an official bank. Now, let's say Stephen comes to me and wants to borrow $100,000. Well, I only have $10,000 in my whole bank. But because I'm a bank with fractional reserve banking, I can lend him like $100,000, even though I only have like 10% of that. That's enough of a fraction of the reserve to loan him $100,000, which I really don't have.
But you get to make interest on it.
I get to make interest on the $100,000 that I don't have that I gave to you and made a little entry in the computer. And you can go out and do your improvements on your house. You can go buy a car or whatever. And then you can take the next 10 or 20 years to pay me back, however long it takes.
And the interest is the only way that works that way, right?
I'm not sure how you mean
that. I think the interest, the fact that there is interest is the only way that that system could work in the first place, I think.
Is that right? I don't quite follow you there. Explain.
Well, just because, I mean, you're not going to lend the money that you don't have out unless you're going to get more back, like...
I'm already getting 10 times what I have back.
Maybe I don't. I don't know.
Listen, this is the, and someone, if there's an expert out there, they can correct me. This is how absurd this is. This is really absurd. In other words, I only have $10,000 in my bank. But because of our laws, I can lend out $100,000. Even though I only have 10% of that money. I believe that's how it works. Anyway. Mm. Isn't that astonishing? I'll have to listen to the movie again.
kind of like the game of musical chairs that they give as an example, where when music stops and you're not sitting in a chair, you know, well, you're going into bankruptcy.
Well, what it is the banks are allowed to lend money that they don't have. Literally. They only have to have they are allowed to lend out 10 to 12 times the amount of money that they have. Now, I'm sure there are people that are a lot more expert on this than I am, so someone tell me how crazy I am. But that's really how it works. That's my understanding. If that makes any sense, it's so once I get $1 million, when they pay me back, now I can go to 100 million. And that's how the bankers make so much money. And that's how they go default so easily, because, like, if, you know, let's say you own a big construction company and I've got $100,000 and you need $1 million, well, I've got enough of that percentage where we can count it as quote unquote money in the bank, even though it really isn't there. You can get that $1 million loan. I can give you $1 million loan, even though me as a bank, I don't have that $1 million. I only have 10% of that $1 million. Isn't that insane?
Well, see, in the way that it ties to the information that we're talking about, in my opinion, is you see these players in the background that are hidden. Like, they have more worth than a lot of countries do, these corporations.
Oh, yeah.
And see, so who's pulling the strings? That's when we hear this news, it's like, well, what do you believe? What is the actual reason for these things? It's hard to determine that.
We're into the total realm of insanity right here. I mean, it could be any more insane. Rem, tell me I'm wrong.
sorry. you're wrong.
No, seriously.
No, I don't know. I don't know. I'm not really
up on the
bench. I'm not really qualified to really say anything about any of this, what you guys are talking about.
Well, it's you know, it's funny because as I'm studying the Meyer material, what I realize is the emperor really has no clothes. You've heard that saying before?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, of course.
But that's the kind of insane world that we're living in right now. It's so staggering. It's absolutely so staggering. Anyway, this Soleimani, who has recently been killed, was supposedly planning more terrorist attacks or whatever. But like Steven's saying, I don't know what to think. I really don't know what to think over this.
It's such a big deal. I mean, because he's like the second in charge over there.
Yeah.
This is like your vice president getting whacked.
It would be like Iran killing Mike Pence.
Yep.
Or who's the guy, Pompeo? Mike, is it Pompeo?
Secretary of Defense, maybe.
Yeah. Secretary of Defense or something like that.
Yep.
And we're doing it in public.
Mm-hmm.
We're admitting we did this. So, I guess we're off the Meyer material. Rem, what did you want to talk about today? I have all kinds of stuff we could talk about.
I'm just thinking, like, you spent the first couple minutes talking about what we're going to talk about, and now we're 15 minutes in, and we haven't spoken about any of those 10 topics that you brought up, which is fine. But
we do that a
lot. I don't know what I can really offer to. You know, speaking to like what you guys are talking about right now, because I'm not up on any of that stuff.
We are glad that you're going to talk about the Meyer material instead. That was just a tangent, believe me. Do you have something from The Way to Live? Or?
Oh man, I mean, I've been really, really digging this book lately. What was that thing? Hey, I know you didn't mention this at the beginning of the show as one of the things that you were going to talk about, but I sent you something like a few weeks ago. Do you remember that?
Yes, like I remember it, but I probably am not going to be able to find it.
Let's see. We were talking about it at our group Okay, so it's number 435. So what page? Number 435. So what page number would that be? That would be 372.
Well, why don't you explain a little bit about this numbering system?
Well, it's just the Billy put a like a cap of like 500 things that he wanted to put in this book. I mean, he could go on and on and on, but he ended it at 500. I don't think there's any special reason for that that I know of, but that's on, so that they're just verses or like thoughts. And that's just what this book is composed of, is just like these topics. It's not really numbered. There's not really a title for each number. It's just number like 435, for example. So.
And he wrote this book. It's called The Way to Live, The Art to Live in what, 1997, I think. And it was published.
Die Art zu Leben. It's November 8th, 1995 to January 8th, 1997. So, okay. You know, a little over a year took him to write this book.
And it has some wonderfully insightful things in it. And in this section that you're talking about, I have a highlighted thing. Let me read it and I can get you to comment on it.
Yeah.
It says, the self-condemnation leads to affliction and misery, for which reason it is very important, indeed, even vital, that one never gives in to an attempt to condemn oneself. And I know many times in my life I've felt, you know, like I condemn myself. I think poorly of myself. We're not supposed to do that, are we?
No. It's easy to do. I think everybody does it, but.
Right. Part of fulfilling our duty to ourselves is to never condemn ourselves. We're supposed to be our own best friend, right?
Yeah. Yeah, because what you're going to have to live with yourself anyway, and what you can either live with yourself as your own enemy, or you can decide to be your own friend, right?
So you shouldn't chastise yourself. You shouldn't abuse yourself. You shouldn't have feelings of inferiority, and you shouldn't have any bitterness.
Right, and there's always going to be people who are. Who are better off and worse off than you are, and everybody's different, right? So,
right.
And then at the very end of this verse was something that I keep thinking about. It says, "Problems are there to be solved, and indeed, before they become a burden and impair the consciousness so much that in uncontrollable outgrowths, the thoughts, feelings, and emotions cause confusion, affliction, and misery."
I really like the beginning of that. Problems are there to be solved. That's his optimism. I just love that. And it's very comforting. It's very comforting.
Yeah, it's motivating too, because it's like we always encounter problems. Everyone encounters problems. And just the thought that they're there to be solved is, I think I find that extremely motivating to want to overcome them, you know.
I had a circumstance this week at work, and I got a buddy. He's a great guy and he's a really good programmer. But one of the fundamental things that I kind of live by is, if it isn't broken, don't fix it.
Yeah.
Where he likes to go in and just, you know, generally improve things and fix something that really isn't broken. You know what I'm saying? It actually fulfills it. So I have this, it's like if I think about it the wrong way, it can become the vicious cycle, something I'm obsessing over. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And you know, we had another scenario like that, and even the CTO of the company has come out and said more than once in company meetings, if you don't have what we call a JIRA ticket, don't do it. you can only so. But anyway, my buddy, who is a great guy and a very talented player, goes in and he makes things better. But sometimes that's a little bit causes a lot of
downstream issues.
Oh my goodness, it can cause big problems down the line sometimes. But anyway, no problem. I didn't, you know, psychologically didn't affect me at all because I'm kind of used to this now over the various years. Even if it blows up later, so be it. I have to fix it, whatever.
What kind of advice does he give, guys? On, let's say somebody blew it in there. They look back with remorse, you know, on what they did maybe. What advice does he have for a person like that in this?
Oh, yeah, that's a good question because, well, the one thing he says, and I'd like to hear what Rem says about this, but you know how he says, never let your thoughts adrift on the ocean of life? Steer your thoughts like a captain steers a ship. Because, and I have it, even though I've said that to myself 10,000 times, I still let my thoughts drift, like you said, sometimes to the past. You know, where I maybe kind of screwed something up, or I wonder if I'd have done something a little different, if it would have been better. You know, Rem, do you remember reading anything about that? Or
no, but I mean, I would say that I mean, if you have somebody who's afflicted because they feel like they really blew it for their entire life, I would say that it's never too late to make a turnaround for the better, and then also that's why, even if it's at the very last moment of life, there's always if the entire life has been kind of wasted essentially, which no life is ever a waste, I would say.
Right.
Because everything is a learning experience. But even if you were to say generally that somebody's life has been squandered, that's part of the reason why there is reincarnation, and what, because you get to try again, right?
Absolutely.
It's all just for evolution and for learning.
Well, there you go. I think that's the key for me, is that instead of being living in remorse, if I look at it and say, hey, I acknowledge where I messed up, hey, that's what the lesson was, that you learned. You learned from your mistake. You didn't live your whole life in denial. Right. You recognize, oh man, I kind of blew it there. And now you can improve. You know, so that's, to me, I don't know, it's like a feedback loop, or it's a way that we learn, is you make a mistake, and if you're, you know, able to receive it and acknowledge the fact that you made a mistake, well, that's okay. You know, don't beat yourself up over it, but acknowledge it, learn from it, and move forward.
I saw a really good movie this week on YouTube. It was about Dr. Ian Stevenson from the University of Virginia. So I think he was in the psychiatry department. And he investigated like 2,000 cases of reincarnation. And in one of these cases, and he would travel, and he would go, like in this one case, he went to India, where he talked to a family and this young boy, because this young boy explained that he used to be a robber, you know. And I know, Rem, you were saying about a wasted life, but in this past life, when he was a man in this previous life, he would hide at certain places in this forest in India, and when people would come by, he would rob them, okay? And when the police finally found out about him doing this, and then when they came after him, he shot himself, and he put this gun, this rifle, like it was really gross, in his mouth, and pulled the trigger with his toe, and it blew off the top of his head. And the boy, who had memories, clear, totally vivid, could tell you the whole story of his previous life, had this place on the top of his head where you could like pull the hair away and see this horrible, you know, it was like a birthmark. And this is a normal thing. And almost all of these cases, that Dr. Ian Stevenson researched, that the kids that remembered the previous life had some trauma. And if there was an injury, it was usually carried over to the next life as like a birthmark in some way. There was one case where a kid had a previous life memory of being shot with a shotgun. And like if you lifted up his shirt, on his left pec was this, you know, kind of nasty birthmark where there was like the skin was totally white, you know, and he was a person from India as well. So that really stuck out. I think it was a person from India. Yeah. Isn't that interesting? Have you guys ever heard of the story of James Leiniger?
Well, maybe. Is that the person who was in World War II?
Yeah, that's the one.
Died, and then the kid remembered the same airplane and all the stuff?
Exactly. He remembered the name of the aircraft carrier, the Potomac Bay. He remembered that he was shot down over Iwo Jima, and that he was caught in a fire where the plane caught on fire. Not only did he, you know, burn up, but then I think he went crashed in the ocean after he burned up. Pretty traumatic event, but very interesting.
Yeah, I don't know. I have also thought that I wonder if it's possible that that kid could be tapping into the storage banks and because he's on the same frequency or something. You know,
there's probably some of that. There, I wouldn't, you know, say that's impossible. But
no way to prove that, though. You know, I have no idea how you do that.
Right. And that's what Dr. Ian Stevenson would say, is that even in these cases, it doesn't mean it scientifically absolutely proves, you know, the reincarnation thing. But on a lot of these, it would be very, very difficult to explain it any other way. You would have to go to real extremes, I think, to try to explain, especially the case of the boy that was a pilot, because he knew the names of the people he flew with and, you know, stuff that there's no way he could have known.
But is it accurate in your guys' reading of Meyer material that our past relationships sometimes in new incarnations, in other words, people that you were close with in a prior incarnation, they might be a part of your current lifetime? Well, isn't Calliope somebody that was a part of his life before?
Thank you. Oh, that's a good question.
Yeah, it is. I mean, I think there was some kind of jealousy. I remember reading in some kind of some of the contact reports from, I want to say, somewhere in the 80s when Calliope was jealous of Elsie Moser because Billy had revealed that in a previous lifetime, him and Elsie were a couple and they were married. And Calliope found out about that and
freaked out.
Yeah. Couldn't handle it.
Who? Can you tell us more about Elsie Moser? I remember that name from the movie.
She was in the movie. She was a school teacher and she spoke pretty good English. And actually she just passed away last year.
Just
in 2019. She left the group. She left the core group a long time ago. And I want to say in the 80s or in the 90s. So kind of a long time ago, but I really don't know much about her as a person other than, I know that she was at one point, she was tasked with going to the USA, coming here to America to try to find a good location for another center in America. And she got like totally distracted and caught up in the whims of being in this country and then basically failed at her task which was to find a place. And then, but I think she was, for the time that she was a core group member, I think that she did a, you know, decent job. And I don't know, you know, I mean,
we've probably gotten off topic again, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Get us back on topic.
So, but I still have this book open, The Way to Live. And then the next one in here is number 436. And I've been thinking about this one a lot too. It's really interesting because the encapsulation of this is basically that you don't wait until death to find out the nature of your spirit. You can only do that during your physical life.
So how do you find the nature of your spirit? I probably read this
through meditation, but it says when the human being concerns himself or herself only with his or her material life and all the associated matters, as well as the aspects of the material consciousness, and only gets to know these things, which dissolve through the onset of the death, then he or she misses out on getting to know the aspects of the spirit, which, as or power, so like as the original power, forms the entire existence and lives on for all time. And then if you skip down, it says, therefore, it's extremely essential to make oneself familiar with the true nature of the spirit, that is to say, the true vazen of the spirit, which must naturally happen during one's lifetime, because when the dying comes and the death approaches, it is too late.
Wow. So it says here, when the human being does not occupy himself or herself with that for all of his or her life, and also in the dying, he or she remains without an idea of that which works in him, her, and persists. Thus the knowledge about the dimension of the deeper reality of the true nature of the spirit remains closed. Wow, this is something that I've missed. Thanks, Rem. I've missed this. And if the human being lacks this knowledge, then he or she is also incapable of recognizing and understanding the sense of life, whereby he or she does not live according to it and neglects his entire duty of life. Oh my. I didn't mean to interrupt you.
No, that's exactly what it says right there. That basically filled in the gap of in between the different sentences that I read.
So,
yeah.
So, okay. Our spirit then, so even though we're studying this material and we're learning things from the Might of Thoughts and whatever, we're learning things from the Way to Live, we may not be getting in touch with our spirit. Is that what this is saying?
I guess you could interpret it that way. Part of it. I mean, I think there's so much in finding out about your spirit, which is basically your life energy, your life giving energy. So associated with that is also the fact that a lot of people use this term spiritual, and they really should be using the term consciousness related, like relating to the consciousness. A lot of people say spirituality and the term spirit. And Billy has mentioned this over and over again, that a lot of the time it's really consciousness that they are meaning to address. Material consciousness.
You know, it's kind of interesting what you're talking about. A lot of what I've been reading lately or rereading in The Might of Thoughts is talking about things in the subconscious.
Mm-hmm.
So in a way, I kind of see those, you know, you got your subconscious, then you've got your unconscious, and then you've got your spirit form, you know. It's almost a process of going deeper in some ways, even though they're two separate things, right?
Yeah.
But there's so much going on inside of our heads. And let me read something. Maybe I got this right here. Maybe this will kind of go along. Lower thoughts form lower feelings, lower habits, and lower circumstances, such as alcoholism, hate, affliction, resentment, sorrow, grief, bitterness, errors of judgment, and so forth, and many kinds of suffering. If one's thoughts are destructive, then they crystallize into confusing and exhausting habits and circumstances, which the human being who is afflicted by them is no longer able to control. The bad and confusing habits and circumstances harden, and then soon thoughts of fear, of doubt, and of indecision arise, whereby already, after a relatively short time, everything becomes automatic, and all processes thereby run unconsciously. So I think we have these bad habits, you know, like anxiety or anger, and we seem to run automatically if we let them.
Mm-hmm.
Have you ever noticed that? I was just giving the example earlier. What I didn't say about that example of, you know, this situation at my work is that I kind of thought I was, you know, good with it, you know. And then I woke up in the middle. I went to bed real early, fell asleep. Then I woke up, you know, in the middle of the night to go to the restroom, and then I come back to bed, and pop, that goes in my mind. And then before I realize it, I'm thinking about the whole thing again and trying to reanalyze it, you know. And then pretty soon then my thoughts, they run away from me for a little while. And I can't control them anymore. And I have to kind of pull them back. But I'm sure you've experienced something like that.
I'm sure I have.
Okay, I didn't know.
I'm trying to see this, you guys. We have our material consciousness and our spiritual consciousness.
Mm-hmm.
And what are some things that we can tell the listeners how to differentiate between the two? My thinking is, and I could be wrong, with the spiritual side of the house, these are those things that you've talked about that are you know, the striving, they have negative and positive inclusion. It's neutral, positive, balanced, right?
Mm-hmm.
So contrasting, like, so if somebody's going to try to discover their spiritual consciousness, right?
Mm-hmm.
How does that look different than our material consciousness?
One thing I would say, and Rem, if you want to take this right away, go ahead. But one thing, you know how he talks about those quiet impulses of wisdom that come from the spirit. I sometimes get those and I just get charged up with enthusiasm, and then I want to get to work on something. And I feel like I've had some kind of insight, and like things just go like crazy. time seems to change my experience of time. So if you get one of these quiet impulses of wisdom and then you follow it, it's kind of like life altering, almost like, you know, you just, have you ever had those times? I give you an example. Like, I've had this happen before. Like, I'll be working on something at work and I lose track of time, and it's like, oh, you know, suddenly I'm getting real hungry, but I resist the pain, you know, and I just keep working. And
I call that zone.
You know, yeah. So when you're, I think the spirit form, when it sends you these impulses of wisdom and you follow them and you embrace them enthusiastically, that's one thing I notice. You're in the zone. Time is going away. Everything's flowing. You know, it's amazing. And you wish you could be that way all the time. And I'm sure you, as an artist, Ren, have experienced that, right?
I don't know. I mean, I think it's possible that I may have. But, I mean, there's definitely plenty of times when I'm working on some type of art and the time just melts away.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know if that has anything to do with the spiritual consciousness or the material consciousness or just, you know, the way that you perceive time when you get into like a flow state.
Mm-hmm. Remember the book, The Flow?
But
do you have that book?
No.
There's a book called The Flow. You should check it out. Yeah, it's really interesting. It's up in my thing of books there. I have this giant bookshelf, but I couldn't find it right now probably.
But I've thought about, I don't know if, I mean, there's times when I get impulses and I think it, and then I think about it later and I wonder, did that come from my spiritual consciousness, or did it, you know, was it my material consciousness picking up on something that is from the storage banks, or my spiritual consciousness picking up on the storage banks, or is it just something from my unconscious mind or my subconscious mind?
Mm-hmm.
It's so hard to know.
I don't think
it's coming from. And I think that maybe you can get a better understanding if you meditate. The more you meditate, the more you can find out about you. I have no idea how you can find out about that. You know,
I don't think you could know. I don't think you could know for sure. You know, you could. I'm speculating in my case.
But that seems like, it seems like meditation would be the best way to find out about that, and it would be only after a lot of meditation. It's not like you're just going to meditate a few times and then have the answer.
You know, the thing of it is, I'm sorry to interrupt you, Steve, but I don't meditate probably the way I should. Like, he always wants you to meditate with a candle, right?
Not necessarily.
Okay.
That's just one of the meditation methods. But there's so many different meditation methods. I mean,
which one do you use the most?
Well, I go on spurts of doing the candle meditation, like the one that goes from, you know, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12 minutes. You know, you do the 5 minutes one day, 5 minutes the next, 6 the next day, 7 the next day. That's the meditation that is taught in the book, The Psyche.
Mm-hmm.
But then there's the one that I do most frequently and is probably the peace meditation, because that one is, you can do that anytime, and I don't do it all the time. I know there's other people that do it just whenever they want, and you can do that whenever you want. Now it used to be only like the first and third week, weekends of the month of each month. And there was actually a peace meditation earlier today. There were two earlier today where like everybody around the world who does it at the same time. And I usually do that. I usually do those, or at least one of them if I can. There's two on Saturday and one on Sunday, on the first Saturday, first weekend, and then the third weekend of each month. And that's the one that apparently the Pleiaren have, like 3.5 billion people in their federation who also participate in those particular ones as well, solely for our planet and its well-being of regarding peace and like trying to reduce the problems with relating to religious thinking and all of the problems that result from there. So the peace meditation is the one that I do the most, and then there's tons of other meditation books. And I think I want to say that I think one of the groups, potentially Canada or Australia, or I think they're in the process of translating. I want to say Introduction to Meditation, the book that Billy wrote. I mean, there's so many different types of meditation. When I was there in Switzerland, I was sitting down with Billy in the front of his house a year and a half ago, and I mean, he said there's so many different types of meditation, but I mean, you can kind of narrow it. He said that you can narrow it down to two different types of meditation, because one, there's the actual meditation where you sit down and try to meditate. You can sit down, lie down, you can stand, you can do it in any position. It's all in the matter of your consciousness. It has to do with your consciousness. It doesn't matter how you do it. I mean, and there are instructions on how to do it in a proper way. There are proper ways to do it. Like if you wanted to sit with your spine straight. But generally it's good to be relaxed and not distracted, but I think. But there's the meditation. There's the one type of meditation, which is the actual traditional meditation that we think of. And then he said the other type of meditation is just everyday life, because pretty much any task you're focusing on is a meditation, where you are focusing is the key word, and concentrating, and concentration is basically a form of meditation, he said. So if you're at work, you're concentrating on a task at work, or you're concentrating on doing the dishes, or you're trying to concentrate on falling asleep, it's all basically a meditation.
You know, it's interesting
the way that he put it.
I think sleep is a form of concentration in a weird sort of way. Have you ever thought of it that way?
I don't think I've ever thought about it exactly that way, but
Yeah, because when I drift off, it's I usually, like, my mind, I can feel it. It a lot of times will focus on something, and then, you know, then I drift off, and it's like I've got this image in my mind or something. But when I don't fall asleep as well, it's like my thoughts just are going all over the place, back and forth. But anyway, it's just, you've never experienced that. I know, I'm weird.
I have, yeah. I definitely have.
But, so that, you wanted to talk about meditation, and we started, you know, this getting to know your true nature of your spirit. I'd like to learn more about that. Does he talk about that anywhere else that you know?
I think it's all over the place, but I haven't really, I don't have it in my, like, internal library of, you know, how you have that, you know, like, I can think of different times where I've read different things. I can't think of other places where I've read that, but I know I have.
Oh, okay. I think that is fascinating.
And then, it keeps going, though. So, and only he or she who occupies himself or herself with it during the life and who makes an effort concerning that can be prepared when, in the moment when the death takes hold, the truthly nature of the spirit spontaneously and mightfully reveals itself. In the instant of the death, the human being must be conscious of the real truth and existence of the spirit and react as naturally as is demanded by the naturalness of the death. when the spirit escapes from the coarse material body of the human being in order to be taken up into the protecting level of the spiritual realm of the other world.
Interesting.
And protecting level, I want to say that that's only in terms of the fact that it's the spirit is now away from the material existence, and there's no way that it can be touched by anything.
Good point.
I wonder if people that aren't ready for that, right? What's going through their consciousness, if you will? Another, they have to be processing, like, what's happening? Why am I separated from my body type thing?
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. And it's being protected in the other level, not in this, I think it's probably a neutral term, not in the sense that it's being protected like from evil or something, but it's protected from everything, like it's or even shielded, you know, like, but protected from, like it can't learn anymore, because the learning is what takes place in the physical lifetime. So, and that's also what he mentions earlier in this verse 436, that's page 374 of The Way to Live. The only possibility of learning about the nature of your spirit is during physical life. You can't do it during death, because you can't learn anything new during death, because your physical tools for learning are not there anymore. Which is your body, right? Your consciousness.
That kind of raises a question then for me, as far as what are the higher levels, as far as like Arhat, Athrasada, right, where they don't have bodies, then how do they learn?
Yeah. I don't know.
Interesting.
Hang in there, guys. I want to bring up something here. And this is from Michael Udebrook's Reincarnation movie. I guess you guys remember that. And one thing that Michael talks about is evolutive values. Evolutive values are timeless. These are values like learning about love, wisdom, and harmony. The evolutive values are the purest kind of knowledge. The consciousness block and the spirit form retreat at the time of death and go back to the spirit realm. The evolutive values are passed on to the spirit form. At the moment of death, the spirit form and the consciousness block go into the otherworldly spheres. The consciousness block goes to the realm of the overall consciousness block. When the brain activity stops, the consciousness block goes into the overall consciousness block. The consciousness and its personality are dissolved and stored. That's your material consciousness. The overall consciousness block creates a new material consciousness block with a new personality. A personality is never repeated. However, the spirit form can reincarnate. We are not stuck in the same old patterns, because we get a new personality that is unburdened by the past. It's the same spirit form that reincarnates during each life. The level of consciousness evolution of the new personality starts off where the past personality left off. There are various levels of consciousness forms. Okay, these are the consciousness forms. This is what we learn. We're talking about learning. We learn things like modesty, love, respect. The highest level of each one of these consciousness forms are called essences. The essences are programmed into the subconsciousness of the new personality. So when you reincarnate again, it's programmed into your subconscious, all these things that you might have gained from the previous life, like love, honesty, respect, patience, diligence, humor. So that's how the knowledge from the previous life it's stored in the spirit form, right? It's stored in partially in the subconscious. But the new consciousness of the baby is like wiped clean. It has to, it's new. It has to learn everything again.
I think the knowledge from the previous life is not, I don't think it's stored in the spirit form. I think if the knowledge itself is in the overall, is it in the overall consciousness block or the storage banks, but the, but not in the spirit form. I think the wisdom is stored in the spirit form. The wisdom that is attained in the,
Okay. Now you made a distinction. We're running out of time. We got only five minutes left.
Yeah, we got like 5 minutes left. Yeah.
So you made a distinction between wisdom and knowledge, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So the wisdom is going to the spirit form. Now, how would you differentiate those two, wisdom and knowledge?
Well, the wisdom is,
I've never like heard this before.
It's like the practical experience and kind of the takeaway from the from experiencing knowledge. And there's knowledge is just, it's just like facts and, you know?
Okay. Like, so you're saying that the spirit form does gain wisdom and stores this wisdom. Right.
Only, I think it stores only the highest values of things, and if it doesn't correspond to reality, and correspond to logic, then it's not stored.
So your spirit form wouldn't store something that's mundane, that's really not that valuable, like. You know, like it had, if it had something to do with driving a particular kind of car or something, your spirit form probably wouldn't hold on to that information. Is that the kind of thing you're saying?
I think so. Okay. I mean,
that's very interesting. I never thought of it that way, Ram. That's a very good point. I mean, your spirit form, your spiritual consciousness, it's dealing with the big issues, the big picture. It's not going to deal with something trivial like that. Like, it probably doesn't. It's not going to store how to use a cell phone, right? I would assume.
No, but like, yeah, I don't know.
Thanks, Ram. I mean, what a great show. Where did the hour go? I told you there's a time issue going on.
I guess you'll have to take a rain check for all those topics that you put up for the beginning of the show, right?
When can you come back? Do you need a month? We'll check back.
No, ahead. I could probably do it sooner than that.
Okay, because we kind of got cut off tonight.
Potentially tomorrow even, but if you were thinking about doing one tomorrow.
Well, we won't do one till next Saturday again.
Next Saturday I can't. So.
Okay, well, we'll try. We'll keep trying. Thanks, Ram. Thanks, Steven.
Yeah, thanks.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.